Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Star Trek Voyager series regular, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong. So remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. Hello, Robbie.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, sir. How are
hey,
you?
Hey, I'm okay. Okay.
Good.
What's new in the hood?
What's new? Well, my son had his baby.
Woo!
And she was born last Saturday. Her name is Skye.
Congrats.
On March 12th. Yeah, just so excited for him and for his wife, Noga. And we're really happy. So
you're a grandpa now.
I am a grandpa.
How do you feel about that?
I don't feel old enough to have a grandchild. I decided whatever my nickname is, it's got to be something without a grand or a grand anything.
Okay.
It's got to be like.
You want Papaw? You want that?
Peepaw? Or Papa Robbie?
Well, in the South, did you guys say Meemaw and Papaw in Georgia or North Carolina? Okay, that's in Tennessee. I know Meemaw and Papaw is in Tennessee. So
that sounds like a Appalachian.
Maybe. So you want something, you don't want grand anywhere in that name?
I don't think so. I want to be like, I don't know. Huh. Boppy or
Boppy.
Beeball.
Beeball?
I want to be some weird. Yeah, I gotta come up with some weird. Maybe we should take a survey amongst
our wonderful listeners.
Would be a weird, odd grandfather name without grand anything.
Okay, I'm gonna call you Boop Boop.
Beep Boop.
Beep Boop. Beep Boop. Pop Boop.
Okay. Yeah, something like that. Okay. How's everything for you?
Everything's good. Getting ready to head out to Europe to do the zero G flight on.
Oh yeah.
For the documentary. With the European Space Agency, the documentary will be showcasing my zero G flight, which I'm nervous. I am nervous. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I will have an injection of motion sickness medicine that is injected, which is evidently much more hardcore than just standard oral medication pills. Uh-huh. So I'm going to go with the hardcore.
Go for it. Yeah.
I don't want to be sick. No. That's just going to be it's going to be horrible if I get sick on that flight. So that's my big fear, that even with that medicine, I may still. So I think the goal is not to eat a lot of breakfast, really just to have maybe some water and maybe a pastry or something, like a continental breakfast, nothing.
Not
big.
A lot of sugar. Don't have a lot
no,
of sugar.
In no, your I'm okay. I'm okay vomiting a Danish up, but I don't want to vomit eggs and, like a whole.
Yeah. Nice.
Ah, no.
Yogurt. A smoothie.
Smoothie. No. Okay. So this week's episode.
Yes, sir.
Are you ready for it?
I think so.
Nothing Human is the title of this week's episode. So let us go watch this, Robbie. Let us come back and give our two cents on this episode. So thank you everyone for tuning in this week. We will be right back with our recap and discussion of the episode Nothing Human. Hey everybody, we are back from watching Nothing Human.
Yes, we are.
Well, our guesses on who the director was incorrect yet again.
We should
always just pick David Livingston. That's it.
At this point in our show, I feel like David was directing every other episode.
Well, what's interesting is that didn't he direct the episode right before this? So
they must have moved something around.
They moved it. Yes, correct. Because as we know, one director cannot direct two episodes back to back. It doesn't work that way
exactly
in our show. So this was a juggled episodic order, clearly, because David gets another one.
Unbelievable.
Let's start off with our poetry synopsis.
Yes, we must first get into the art and poetry of Star Trek. I don't think there's any other podcast that turns Star Trek into poetry. I don't think it's ever been done before, and I don't think it's going to be done after.
And I'm going to say there is no, you know, there are other podcasts done by actors, series regulars from other shows, such as The Office Ladies for The Office.
Yeah.
Community has one, I think. So there's a few out there, but mm-hmm. none of them do poetry synopsis.
Like, no.
No.
You're getting a very highbrow experience here at the Delta Flyers.
You know, it's unparalleled. This is the best podcast experience.
I hope that our poetry inspires people. Actually, I'm kind of not joking now. I'm going to pause for a second and say.
Go. Say it.
When we started doing the poetry synopsis, I started writing some haikus just for fun.
I know. You posted some of those. And I started doing some of those as well. Like I will answer people on Twitter with a haiku. And you were doing that on Instagram, I think, is where you're putting
it. Yeah. But I think it's a really creative way to pause, to kind of meditate a little bit, open up your mind. So I encourage people out there. I know we were joking before, but it actually, working on some little simple poetry is a good exercise for mental health.
Yes. So. There you go. Anyway, all right, here we go. Here's my haiku. My haiku for Nothing Human. Torres gets a hug. The alien won't let go. Doctors save her life.
Ooh.
Oh, you see the plural doctors?
She gets a hug.
And see, I made you laugh about that one. You know,
yeah, you did.
I saw you have a little smile in your face. Because I kept thinking, how am I going to say, you know, she gets, you know, face clamped or neck clamped by this thing. I had no idea. And it does. And I only get five syllables in the beginning. So Torres gets a hug.
Yeah. It's a hug. That's sweet. I hadn't thought of it. See, this is how poetry opens up your mind.
It does.
Wonderful.
Expands your mind. Okay.
Here we go for our limerick poetry synopsis of Nothing Human.
I can't wait.
The doc shares a slideshow with Charm. When an alien screech sets the alarm, B'Elanna's life must be saved. Should all ethics be waived? But remember, first, you must do no harm.
Oh, yeah. Look at
that. Bam, bam, bam.
Boom, boom, boom. Just
pow.
You pow-powed that. I'm so excited. Yeah. Good job, man.
You're welcome.
All right. Cool.
We talked about director David Livingston, mm-hmm. which we keep guessing wrong, who directed this. So we might as well just say David Livingston from now
every
on.
Every time, yes.
But I want to bring up something else. Jerry Taylor wrote the screenplay.
Yes.
And this is the very last script that Jerry Taylor is credited with writing. So
really?
I just want to pause and say one of the creators of our show, this was her last episode. And I think she was fairly happy with it. I think it's a, you know, classic Star Trek moral dilemma kind of story. And for Jerry to have written this, I just think that's awesome that she was still around, still working with us. You know, and a lot of TV shows, the creators of the show, the people that start there are not there a few years later. Like on Chuck, we did have Chris Fedak stick with us the whole time, but Josh Schwartz took off after season two and was kind of doing other projects. So a lot of times it's very common for showrunners to step away, move on to new projects after a couple of years. And Jerry did that. And Michael Piller did that. But Rick Berman stuck around. And a lot of the writing staff like Ken Biller and Brandon Braga started with us, stick around. Who else? Who were the other people that stuck through it the whole 7 years? Joe Manowski was not really on first season, was he?
No, he came in later, but he was there until the end once he came in.
But he was there until the end once he came in, but I think he came in later.
Yeah, I think it was just Berman and Braga that were always there.
But anyway, Jerry Taylor wrote the script. Hats off to her for everything she did for the show.
Yeah, just want to say a quick thank you to Jerry Taylor for everything that she did up until this final contribution by her. Yeah. And we love Jerry.
Yeah, for sure. So David Clennon was Krell.
Yeah.
And David Clennon is most known for his Emmy Award winning performance in 30 something, which is where I remember him from. He was like ran The Office or something.
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
worked. I think his very first job, which you know I love to talk about.
Yes, you do.
Was a movie, a classic film called The Paper Chase.
Oh, my goodness.
1973. That was his first job he ever had. Mm. And I know David Clennon is very good friends with Bob Picardo.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I remember sometime around filming this episode, because I got to be in some scenes with David Clennon, and I remember he was such a nice guy. We had a lot of mutual friends from theater days and all that. So David Clennon was doing a play, this kind of weird experimental play, and it was in a church. Not even a church turned into a theater. It was a church.
Hmm.
It was like an environmental play. It was like Satan argues with somebody. I can't even remember what the play was, but it was the audience sort of sat in the church, and then the play happened all around you in the aisles and up in the choir loft. And David Clennon was in there. I remember meeting Bob Picardo for dinner one Sunday, and we went to see a matinee or something of this play that David Clennon was in. It was great. I loved it. He was an awesome guy.
It was kind of like theater in the round, but in a church. Like, it was happening everywhere in the theater, in the church. That's a really interesting concept.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Huh. And David Clennon was awesome. He's a wonderful actor. And then we have, I think it's Jad Major. I don't know.
I think it's Major. Jad Major. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think so.
Jad was born in 1969. He's from New York City. His very first job was a 1990 film, a thriller called Reversal of Fortune.
Mm-hmm.
J.D. Cullum was in that movie as well. And he also was in the biopic The Doors that Oliver Stone directed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, interesting actor. He did two episodes with us. He did this one, and then he did one in season 7.
That's I noticed. Right. Yeah. So, he's done. Yeah. He did two episodes and a good actor. I thought he did a good job in this.
Yeah. Episode. Tough to come in deep in a series like ours and try to be one of the gang. You know, his character was supposed to have been there the whole time. But, you know, all of a sudden he's popping up in season 5. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So for the show, for the episode, before we start into the plot, I just want to say that one thing I noticed as I watched it was, you know, actors can have patterns, right, that they sort of fall into, like doing certain habits and things like that.
Yes.
And directors can also have patterns and habits.
Interesting.
And we talked about David Livingston directed the show. We've talked about his use of wide angle lenses a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one pattern in this that I thought was new for David, and he was doing it a lot. And that was these long Steadicam kind of oners that went on and on, and the actors moved constantly. And I was trying to figure out, like, why is this such a pattern in this? And as I was looking, after I watched it, looking up, you know, some of the research on the episode, I saw David had been quoted as saying he thought it was a lot of exposition. This episode was just a lot of like backstory and back talk. And so he wanted to keep it visually energetic. And so he said, I think in the quote or something, he talked about trying to create a dance with the actors in every scene to never stop moving. And I was like, of course. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah.
This pattern of these constant runners that went on, and the camera kept swirling around. And personally, I find that interesting as long as it stays motivated enough. And I felt like sometimes we weren't motivated. Like we were just moving around for the sake of moving around. And I felt that a lot. So that's the pattern, I guess. I would say that the overall, when I watched this episode, I was like, oh, we're just, there's this decision made that we're going to be moving. And so we move, whether it's motivated or not. I think overall it was successful, but sometimes it took me out of it. It was almost too much movement. So.
Okay. So, and also, because there may be people who just jump in and listen to our podcast for the very first time on this particular episode.
Yeah.
Will you please define what a oner is to people, just in layman's terms?
Yeah, typically in film, right, you've got cuts. You start in one shot and then someone stops and you cut into a close-up, and then you cut to their point of view or the other character's close-up, and you cut to an insert of the thing they're touching. And you know, there's a series of cuts in the edit that you make.
Multiple shots.
A oner is one shot that has no cuts that continues. Usually a oner has movement to it. Mm-hmm. Could be a steady cam, could be a dolly, could be handheld, but it has some sort of movement. I remember a quote from Rick Berman once. He was watching a cut of an episode and he said, he stopped in the middle. Because I used to go watch Rick give notes during lunch because I was trying to direct and I wanted to know like what he liked, what he didn't like. And I remember once, and I used this quote for years, although now I don't think it's quite precisely true, but it seemed very wise to me at the time. And Rick stopped the episode and he just goes, God, everybody's just standing there talking. He says, did anybody tell this director it's motion pictures? That means motion.
Movement.
And then he goes on to say, either the camera needs to be moving or the actors need to be moving.
Yeah.
But they can't both be standing still all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember using that quote a lot and thinking of it, Rick, you know, that little quote stuck with me of either the camera should be moving, pushing in or wrapping around or doing something, some dolly move, or the actor should be moving. All right. So our episode, Nothing Human, starts with a holodeck slideshow with the doctor. We cut to the crowd watching. B'Elanna's there. Tom's there. Janeway's there. Tuvok's there. A bunch of other of our crew.
And not Harry.
Not Harry or Chakotay.
No.
And it was interesting because B'Elanna's asleep in the front row.
Yeah.
Janeway's like got her, you know, head in her hands, like just in shock. And Tom is sitting there between them looking back and forth like, what are we doing here? It was very funny.
Yes.
I loved our silent reactions to the doctor just so pleased with himself. And then he pauses at one point and everybody starts to get up. And then he continues on and everybody says, classic comedy. It was very funny. And then the doctor shows a slide of Tom covered in mud. And I got to say, I remember doing this now. Remember when I had to take a bunch of photos
for
this slideshow thing. And they put me in a uniform, took me over to the cave set and just dumped mud. It was like,
okay, so this was just for this episode. This is not taken from another episode.
No, I think this was just a photo.
Yeah.
And I remember it was covered in mud.
Yeah, you were covered.
And they put me in like either a plastic or maybe even a baby, like a kiddie pool or something, so that the water and the mud would collect. Go everywhere. Covered everything.
Yeah.
And then I remember going back to my trailer and having to take a shower. And I think it's the only time that I took a shower at work in that trailer.
In your entire 7 years, it was the only time? Well, you know, part of the reason why we didn't take regular showers is because the head of Transpo, what was the guy? Larry Dukes.
Yeah.
Larry would say, like, he'd come over, like, he was like, hey, just so you know, got to be really quick in the showers. We don't have a lot of water in the tank or something like that.
Right.
Because, there's like limited amount of water in it that he would have to top off. So you took your one shower and that
to get the mud off. I remember it just being a mess. And I was just like, why me? Why do I have to be the one in the mud?
That's funny.
But it's very funny. Mm-hmm. And he says, not done yet. You know, he's got everybody sit down. He's got a funny 12-part slide essay titled Under the Skin or something like that. So he's going to talk about the organs of humanoid species. And he starts with the first slide is the Vulcan reproductive gland, which I was like, whoa, I froze it. I'm like, that's the Vulcan. But he said,
kind of looks like a heart, actually,
or a liver, or a stomach.
Yeah,
it was very funny.
Just that whole beginning scene. You're right. The doctor is so full of himself. It's so funny. It's just
funny.
This is his grand performance for everybody on the bridge or in the crew. You're jumping to the bridge. Harry and Chakotay are there, and Harry reminds Chakotay of what time it is, and Chakotay's like, "I know what time it is." Then Harry then reiterates the reason why he's reminding him is because Chakotay had promised to rescue Janeway and company after 30 minutes of this hollow image show. And then Chakotay tells Harry, well, remember, we had to endure 2 hours of this Hollow Image show. Don't you think it's unfair that we deprive our fellow crewmates of this wonderful experience?
Yeah, it's very funny.
Very sarcastic, you know, and it's so funny because that's when you have a corridor scene. Everyone's leaving and they're into the corridor and they talk about how Chakotay disobeyed orders. So yeah,
Why didn't they go to the yellow alert? Somebody says. And Janeway says, I think this is needs a court martial or something. Like,
There's some humor there that Jerry Taylor threw in there. I like that.
Very funny. Mm-hmm. Very funny. We go into the mess hall.
Yes.
And Paris and Balan are going to the mess hall. And I was like, and Paris orders some coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait a minute. You said it was 2100 hours. This was a 2 hour slideshow we had to endure. That means it's 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. And you're ordering coffee.
And Paris is ordering coffee. I was like, wait a minute. What? Why am I on the midnight shift next?
Yeah,
like, do I need to stay up? But
that's rule number one. You don't need coffee at 11.
Yeah. But then I realized a moment later, the ship shakes and it was to set up the joke line.
Yeah.
That Paris says, what did you put in this coffee, Neelix?
Right. And then you guys run. You just run out of there to the bridge.
By the way, these are like the biggest shakes I've ever seen in my life. Like,
yeah, those are huge shakes.
Huge shakes. Yep. And then it turns out there's minor damage. And I'm just like, wait a minute. Like, we've been in battles that haven't shaken this hard and almost lost the entire ship. But this, I think the shakes were overdone.
You know how the camera goes from you guys to it actually pans over to Neelix's little kitchen area, and you see that whole thing start shaking and things falling off. So I'm guessing that was probably Will Toms at the very bottom, crouched down, shaking it, you know, at the bottom, right, to cause it to fall over.
Yeah, anything like that, like when the set has to, when there's wind or doors or things shaking, that is the onset. Practical effects department. They do the opening, the closing of the doors, they do fire, steam, shaking things. Mm-hmm. And Will Toms was awesome. He was great.
Yeah, really good. All right, let's go to the bridge. And there is a massive energy wave coming towards us. Mm-hmm. And we change course. And that doesn't help because it actually follows us, which is crazy. It hits us, the wave, there's no damage.
No.
But Harry makes a quick announcement. He says, the communications array received a download when the wave hit. So this is very strange. So we then play this message and it's just this unintelligible screeching of some alien life form. That's all we know.
It was very irritating.
Irritating for sure. And then I think, is it Paris that says, hey, there's Paris an ion trail.
Yeah, I found the point of origin. Let's go. She says, find that ship. We come back to the bridge and we have found the ship and it's damaged. And there's some kind of, we think maybe the screeching is a distress signal. There's one life form who's injured, needs our help.
Faint life sign. Yeah.
Faint life sign. So Janeway says, beam it over here. We'll fix it. We'll
beam
help
it to sick bay.
Another Janeway. I mean, I love Janeway. I love Kate Mulgrew. But like,
but you do question Captain Janeway's decisions, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. You do. There's like a screeching, a ship we've never met. We don't know these people. And we're going to bring it on board.
Just beam them aboard. That's just the way it works. You just beam them aboard.
Why don't we go over there and make sure that it's, I don't know.
Because we know that ship is unstable. That's why. So
yeah, it feels like, you know what I'm saying.
I do know what you're saying. Maybe we should, you know, think twice about beaming a strange alien life form aboard.
We don't know if our you know, force fields can hold it, contain it within a... Yeah. We don't know.
Which clearly it doesn't later. So we're in sick bay and Torres comes in and the alien is on the bio bed and there is a containment field there. And Torres debriefs the captain saying some interesting facts that the alien uses biochemical secretions to pilot its ship, to send commands to its ship, which is really super cool. And she's still talking about what's going on. And that's when the alien propels itself off of the bio bed and through the force field. Does anyone even mention about the fact that this thing flew through a force field? How did it even do that? I don't know. I don't get
That's what I'm saying.
Clearly, it has amazing properties.
And by the way, it flies through the force field, hits what I think is a stunt actress that's falling backwards.
Yeah.
And all you see in the side of the frame is the stunt actress's hand doing
the hand, doing that,
doing like fast fast wavy hands. I don't think that was Roxanne.
Fast jazz hands? Was that it?
Yeah, the funny thing about Star Trek stunts is either sometimes they're either too big and like over the top.
Yeah.
Or they're too small that like,
it's
Seven walks past, taps them on the shoulder and they collapse.
They like, fall down. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not always based in reality or stunts. So when that lizard came and you see the Balana double going back and the hand going like this, it just seemed a little on the over the top end.
Okay. But, all right. So we're either too subtle or way over the top. That's just how we do it. That's how we do it on Voyager.
We have trouble finding that natural
the middle ground. Yes. Okay. You know, everyone's freaking out. The doctor's freaking out a lot. I mean, lately he's had so many emotions where he's screaming and yelling in multiple episodes. And here he is saying, don't do anything. It might hurt Torres. And Janeway says, Harry, beam the alien back to its vessel. And Harry can't get a lock. And then we figure out that this alien has basically just got it has kind of used
like
Torres,
a parasite,
like a parasite,
like a life support.
Like a life support. It's using Torres as like a battery, like an energy source to keep it alive. But now it's completely weaved itself into all of Torres's, you know,
internal organs
and her circulatory system.
Says we can't get I can't just surgically remove this without risking her life. And so we don't want to do that. At this point, Paris is in there and he's very upset. And this is the first time I made a note of like, here's a oneer. We're walking around. Like, why do we all, as we're trying to find a solution for Balana, why does the doctor walk into his office? Then Janeway follows. Then Paris shows up. Like, we've left Balana
alone,
unsupervised. Like,
you
don't
even,
for no
so
reason.
Weird.
We didn't need to go in his office to have this conversation.
You could have stayed there.
We could have stayed right there. It just felt like this was the first time I went, oh, this is that oneer that where we're just moving and dancing. And it's cool. It definitely has energy.
Yeah. And it flowed well, you know.
It flowed well. Mm-hmm. It was a well-done oneer. But fundamentally to me, I'm like, we didn't need to come in this office. There was nothing in here that anyone had to physically get
or
information they needed. We could have done all of this.
All of that could have been done by the biobed for sure.
Yeah. And by the way, when I walked in and joined this oneer at one point, I kind of point my finger like to emphasize a point. And I'm like, oh no, am I doing finger acting? I was like, yes, that's, we can do that. I'm like, oh, you know, not the finger acting technique.
You know, when you talk about, you know, not to do facial mugging for actors, that was finger mugging. You finger mugged that particular shot.
It's, and it's funny. That's
I don't remember you doing that, but you can pick it out because it's you.
It was me. And I finger acted and, you know, gesturing like to emphasize things with your hands is really discouraged in acting.
It really is.
Cool. It's not it's a very presentational kind of way to illustrate, you know, an emotion or a story. Yeah. And so, and so it's really
frowned upon,
discouraged and frowned upon. We try to, you know, a good actor really tries not to make a point that way.
Well, the doctor says he has to brush up on his exobiology. Janeway then suggests that creating a hologram that is an expert in exobiology could be a solution to this. If we look in the database, we can find something to create this hologram. And I think Paris is like, Harry can do this. Harry, let's bring Harry in. So
that
brings us into the corridor with the walk and talk with Harry and the doctor discussing what needs to be done. The end of the walk ends up in the holodeck. And this is when Harry brings up the exobiology master himself, Dr. Krell Mozet.
That's when Harry goes, hey, Doc, did you know this is
Cardassian.
A guy was a Cardassian?
And the doctor's like, who cares what he is as long as it helps Balana? That was the initial argument, right? We come back to the holodeck and the doctor is informing Krell of Balana's predicament that she is currently in. And Krell's very interested. Krell's like, oh, this is my specialty, right up my alley. And, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned that they are friends, that they know each other, and you can tell there's chemistry between these two.
Yeah,
when they're on screen, there's definitely a bond there, which is very nice.
Yeah, Agreed.
I transfer him to sick bay where you're there and Torres is still in the bio bed and Doc and Krell mm-hmm. show up. This is when he says, Mr. Paris, don't be rude. And you're like, well, Doc, he's just a, and you stop yourself before saying hologram because the doctor is also a hologram. That was that scene. So that's how yep. that happens. And he comes around and checks on Torres.
That was a scene that, as you say, you can see the chemistry with Bob Picardo and David Clennon. Mm-hmm. Even when Krell says something like, well, someone in, he feels appreciated by the doctor. And so yeah, he's
someone
like,
in Starfleet.
Someone in Starfleet appreciates me.
yeah.
So they both kind of sound a lot, you know, you're starting to go, oh, these are twinsies. Like these very two characters so. Are going to be buddies. The chemistry of the real life friendship was there. So that was all great.
Yeah. So we just finished sick bay. We're in the briefing room or a room and Chakotay and Janeway try to decipher the audio message that was downloaded when the wave hit us, the screeching. It's Chakotay who suggests looking into the alien ship's data banks to maybe mm-hmm. give a little bit more, give us some more information to try to decipher this message. Mm-hmm. And so then Janeway asks Seven to download the data.
In that room with Janeway and Chakotay, they're looking at the audio message in a graph format.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it looks like strands of DNA. So mm-hmm. this alien's language, I guess, doesn't have normal audio waveforms. Like, yeah. I just thought it was interesting. It was definitely like, when you look at an audio editing system or you look yes. at any kind of audio analysis, it's usually a waveform. It's like a,
right.
you know, it traveled, yeah. the audio does this, or maybe right. you have a round sort of how and where the sound is coming from.
Yeah.
This was like DNA strands, which I thought was an odd choice to represent audio, but I guess yeah. that was their way of saying this is not like no other audio we've ever seen before, so we can't decipher it. But yeah. I just thought the graphic choice was unconventional for the audio and interesting. So it that would was. Be Denise and Mike Okuda.
And in right? the spirit of finger mugging, you were just explaining the waveform with a lot of gesture.
Yeah, see, there you go. People do it.
You were
people
doing it.
People do it.
You were doing
but
it.
But the pointing acting, point acting is bad.
Yeah. Try not to point act out there, yeah. actors. You know, Janeway asked Seven to help download this mm-hmm. data, and it flashes over to engineering, where Seven is working, and she says that the alien ship is on the verge of a complete system failure, and we need to download. If we're going to download this info, it's got to happen quickly. Mm-hmm. And so she says, prepare to download the data to Jad Major's character, Tabor. This is the first time mm-hmm. we see him. And the first time we see him and hear him, he answers her. He says, I heard the captain. And it almost it reminded me of Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, sort of,
no, funny.
Smithers. I mean, it's sort of like a very, kind of, and he's like, I heard the captain. Just the way he said it sounded very Smith, Mr. Burns-ish in my funny. Estimation. That's how I heard. Because it's sort of more of a, what would I say? Subdued voice, you know? It's a very
typically
lighter voice.
On Star Trek, we were told and instructed to be very kind of formal and classic kind of, you know, energy and almost theatrical and military in a lot of ways. So when you have some of our guest stars come on and they sort of take a different approach, they're quiet or they're you know, quirky or in whatever way, it does
stick
out.
It does stick out for sure. But I liked it though. Nothing against his
No, not at all. I think it's great to have those different vibes.
So now we jump back to the bridge and the ship explodes. We see the ship exploding.
By the way, this bridge shot was the lowest angle for a wide lens I've ever seen on our show.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, okay. I think, you know, Janeway comes out of her the briefing room or wherever she was. You're almost looking straight up her nostrils as she walks out.
So the camera was the camera was on the floor.
It had to have been
the camera
floor.
Was on the floor.
And then you pan over to the bridge and it's the widest lens I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of low down on the floor, fisheye lenses, making the ship, everything look huge. Very cool shots. Not normal for our show, but for David, very normal.
Yes.
Yeah.
The ship explodes. We do have an exterior cool space shot. Yes, because look at that explosion compared to other explosions. Other explosions that we see on Voyager, it's just a bunch of fiery kind of plasma
stuff
going out.
Yeah, they kind of bury the detail in smoke and stuff. But
good Lord, the detail of this ship coming apart at the seams was like, man.
Yeah, it was cool.
Did they have extra budget for this on this episode or what? I mean, what happened?
Maybe.
wow, I was so impressed with that.
Yeah.
And it was literally what, 2 second shot of that thing exploding, but I was so impressed. I was like, wow, that's a good explosion. They did a good job on that one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we jump to sick bay, and the Doc and Krell are still discussing Torres's situation, and they say that the alien is using B'Elanna as a life preserver, and Krell says that only if he had access to his laboratory. If I had my laboratory here, I could fix everything. And the Doc says, wait a minute, we can recreate your lab on a holodeck. On the holodeck, we can do this. What do you remember everything about? He's like, I spent more time in my lab than my home. So yes, I know everything about it. So that's what they do. We're back into sick bay, and B'Elanna regains consciousness, and she begins to talk to Tom. She looks so cute. It almost looks like she has a scarf that she's wearing, and she's there all cozy or tucked in, and she's talking to Tom, and then she sees Krell, and she realizes, oh my gosh, who is that? Who is that Cardassian? Even though he's a hologram, she's still not happy that this individual is here to help her situation, because of her past, that she was fighting the Cardassian as a member of the Maquis. So this is a huge, huge issue with B'Elanna. All right.
Yep. And then we go to Krell's lab. Another oneer.
Oh, yeah, just, you're right. Oh,
they just start stacking up.
They just they do.
The doctor's raves about Krell's accomplishment, and Krell says that, you know, he talks about him winning an award, and Krell's like,
for awards, the Festosa virus, the cure for the Festosa virus.
Yeah, he's like, awards don't matter. This is about the work. And I do believe he felt that way, you know. You do feel at this point like this doctor is all about the work.
I mean, it's interesting exposition here that he talked about. He's because the doctor says, is this the location where you replicate, where you came up with the cure for the virus? And he says, no. I was on Bajor at the time during the occupation. And that's when he says that, you know, the Cardassians had no business occupying Bajor. And he had limited resources at the civilian hospital compared to the military hospital, which had everything. So he had to improvise. That was the main, that's the main thing that I got out of this speech, that he had to be very improvisational in order to get his work done. So then they begin work on the holographic version of the alien.
They begin to hollow, like a hollow examination. Like they're going to do a dissection or an examination of this alien, hollow alien that they've created, and they begin to get ready for that. We go to the ready room, and Janeway and Chakotay are discussing the message, still trying to decode it. They decide, you know, it had to have been a distress call.
Right.
Maybe if they send it out, if they take that message that they've saved, send it out as a distress call, that maybe his alien species will hear it and will come, and they'll know how to help. So they do send this out, and we go out to space, and you see this this thing sent out, and it looks like a shockwave.
It was so cool. Yeah, because Tuvok had to reroute all the power to the deflector dish, and they sent this this message on all subspace bands. So it did look like a
giant shockwave.
And I wrote down, cool exterior shot of message being transmitted. It was cool. I did like that shot for sure.
It was cool.
Jump back to Krell's lab.
Yeah.
And
humming, by the way.
Yeah, they're both.
Which Bob Picardo loves, you know, music.
Yeah, he loves
to sing. He loves it. So this was probably a great moment for Bob.
Yeah,
he gets to like hum
along.
What do
you think they were humming?
I think it was an opera or classical music or something like that.
All right. Yeah. Again, they're working on the holographic alien, and he asked for a scalpel, and the doctor is like, wow, this thing looks kind of
scalpels that we recognize now are just tiny.
They're
little
small.
Sharp razors.
They're not like that.
This
that
was thing, like a hooked, nasty.
And that thing looked like a Klingon weapon almost. And then, you know, the doctor is questioning Krell, like, this, you're going to use this? And he says, well, the simplest tool is the most effective oftentimes now. And so Krell's suggestion of what to do, in essence, the doctor, you know, says, if you do this, this could kill the alien. And this is where the beginning of these ethical issues, you know, the ethical issues begin here. And Carell keeps saying, well, what do you care about what happens to this alien if we, whatever we do ends up saving B'Elanna? That is the mission. That's the overall goal, is to, and mm-hmm. then, you know, and then the doctor goes, what if this individual, what if this alien life form is the, you know, well, no, he talks about how, what if he is the, the most important, what was his words? He said, what if he's Plato, or what if he's that? He makes comments about, you know, you don't know who this person is. He might be someone who contributes in a major way to his society,
to his species.
Yes. And then, Carell is like, this could also be a psychopathic murderer. You know, you don't know that, you have no clue. So again, this is the beginnings of the ethical issues mm-hmm. in operating on this alien and possibly killing it. And the doctor keeps saying, look, we got to find another way where we can save both. We don't want to just get mm-hmm. rid of the alien and the alien dies and then B'Elanna is mm-hmm. alive. We want to keep them both alive if possible.
On the end of the scene, Carell starts to destabilize.
And this is when Carell begins to fritz a little bit of his program. So the doctor calls Harry to help, and mm-hmm. Harry in turn asks Tabor to assist. So now Harry and Tabor are in sick bay with Tom mm-hmm. sort of watching them working. Mm-hmm. And after a few beats, everything gets worked out in terms of fixing the holographic image of Carell. Mm-hmm. And so as Carell comes back online, Tabor freaks out. I mean, mm-hmm. freaks out. He goes, Carell Maset? He knows exactly who this is. He says that Carell performed experiments on his grandfather and did all types of—
He's a mass murderer.
He's a mass murderer, yeah. And then we have to hold him. Is it you and I that hold him back, kind of?
Like, no, not here. He just says he's a murderer. He just says that. Then they cut to the doctor and Carell. This is the end of the scene.
Yeah.
And I wrote down here, in this moment, why didn't they cut to Tom or Harry? There's no reaction from anyone when he has this big— all of this news is huge, and the only people we see respond are the doctor and Carell, which I thought was a missed opportunity, because Torres is in the room. She was awake earlier. She could have had a reaction, even if it's just looks. I think mm-hmm. it would have been satisfying to see more of the people react.
Right.
So we missed that. Back into sick bay, Tabor is furious. Paris has to grab him and pull him back.
Right.
And I made a note, you know, when you and I, or any of our series regulars, have to do this kind of like grappling and struggling, we've built up, like, we just know each other and we know how to mm-hmm. do it. As I watched this, I was like, it looks like this actor was really going for it. And because we don't know each other, there's not that built up trust of this is going to be safe. It's always tricky doing these scenes where people are getting really physical, because some actors are kind of methody and are not necessarily controlling their flopping around.
Right.
And that was the moment when I watched it, I was like,
whoa.
I could see myself going, oh, this guy's acting like method. Like, it's real.
Yeah.
Like,
he's into it. Yeah. You might get hit for sure.
Yes. And it's just pretend, people. Yeah. Just so you know, I don't want to get hurt playing pretend. Okay.
So now we jump to Chakotay's office/quarters. Mm-hmm. Tabor is now giving us all this exposition about what mm-hmm. Carell did. Every single one of Carell's questionable actions against the Bajorans, and it's a long list. It's a really long list, and he's so passionate and upset right now. And, mm-hmm. and understandably, I mean, he was a kid when he saw this. So,
well, it was just horrible, you know, exposed to radiation, blinding some of them, depriving them of being able to see for the rest of their lives, mm-hmm. exposing others to polytrinic acid. Mm-hmm. It was horrible, horrible experiments. Yeah. Go to sick bay, and B'Elanna will not let Carell operate on her.
Yeah, nowhere near her.
She doesn't want to benefit, she says, from other people's tragedies. And she's really upset. The doctor comes in, and the first thing he says is, Mr. Paris, did you say something to upset her?
What did you say?
Why are you blaming it on me? Like, no, I didn't. It's Carell. It's you, doc, not me. I'm not the problem here. Anyway, she's upset.
She goes into shock, cytoplasmic shock, they say.
Yeah.
Right? So
cytotoxic.
You have cytotoxic? I have cytoplasmic shock.
Okay, right. Let's go with that too.
Let's go with both.
She gets into all the shocks. she goes into shock, And then we cut to engineering, and Harry says,
"Well, Harry and Seven are researching Krell in engineering.
Yes, they found out all of his crimes.
Yeah, and he actually spread the virus. He wasn't trying to find. He was.
They can prove that he purchased the virus. That through the logs of the.
Yeah,
they find that he got the virus, but that he didn't get the antidote or the
enzymes that he needed.
Enzymes that he would need to control it. And so clearly he was getting it to spread the thing
on purpose.
And he had it seems to prove that he has no regard for the others' lives.
No.
And Seven makes a comment here. She says it's interesting because he and the Borg are the same with no regard for others' lives, yet we are the bad guys.
That's right.
Which was interesting.
It's an interesting comment, definitely.
Yeah.
We jump to the holographic Krell lab, and the doctor is now confronting Krell. And, you know, Krell's response is, look, I'm only a hologram. I have no memory of the Bajoran experiments. So he's just like, you know, look, I you can't keep me, you know, you can't blame this on me, or you can't get upset with me about this. Yeah.
He also says, you know, your ethics are arbitrary because your people have done animal experiments.
Yes, correct.
He starts to bring in that kind of stuff. Like, why is it any different that you're experimenting on animals?
And talking about lower life forms and higher life forms, delineation between them. Yeah.
Again, Warner's galore here. I made a note in this scene. There's it jumped out at me that there's moments where actors are turned away from the other character.
Yeah.
Sort of talking towards the camera.
Right.
And I was like, it can be powerful sometimes to have those moments, but there's a lot of that, a lot of like talking, you know, with your back to the other character.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I think a lot of that was done for camera and shots, not necessarily the most realistic or authentic way of communicating in a scene, but those actors made it work. I think David Levinson had the right actors with Dave Clennon and Bob Picardo to do that sort of dance.
And your eye is, you know, as a director, it's trained to see certain things. And although that, you know, you were just mentioning it, it can be a little bit awkward where one actor's looking out in towards camera and not at the other actor. But because
sometimes it can be very powerful.
Yeah, it can be powerful. But my point being is that of all these wonders and throughout this entire episode, nothing was awkward to me. Like I felt like it didn't stand out. I didn't question anything. Yeah. Like, I just felt that
to me,
smoothly.
He did it very smoothly.
Yeah.
I think it was the fact, as I said before we started, it was the pattern.
Yes.
It was the fact that it became a pattern. Yes. Then I started going, oh, we're doing this again.
And
again.
More. And again. Yeah.
And all of them were on their own. I felt like really well done, but when you started to see it as a pattern for the episode, that's when it sort of took me out of, we're doing this more arbitrarily because that's sort of the goal or priority, as opposed to each individual scene maybe photographed or staged a little differently, unique to its story, unique to what is happening there.
Right.
It sort of became a pattern. Just like I said before, sometimes actors can fall into patterns that they don't break their pattern because maybe the scene should be played a little more internally or a little, you know, whatever the pattern is.
I'm curious to see in the episodes after this, if Tom Paris does this more
finger, you know, acting.
Is that a pattern?
Could be a pattern. Could be.
So now, you know, there's that huge discussion between the doctor and Krell. Then we jump to Chakotay's quarters and Tabor is at the door and he comes in and he basically says, I'm done. I quit. You know, I don't want to be any part of any organization that utilizes any help from this guy that basically murdered my grandfather. No, thanks.
Now, I got a question though. Is this Chakotay's quarters or is it like his office? Cause he's got a desk and all that stuff.
So I thought maybe this is the beginning. You walk in and the first room you see is the office. Then his quarters is off to the side, or maybe he has his own office.
I don't know, because there's red lights everywhere. And I titled this location Club Chakotay because
Club Tuvok, Club Chakotay.
Club
Tuvok
had the kind of purple lights.
Purplish lights. And then
Club Chakotay has red. And I just made a note that Janeway doesn't have any disco club lights in her in her office. So I don't know why Club Chakotay
gets an office with lights, but
you know, anyway. I think Janeway had a really bad experience clubbing when she was young.
That must have been it.
She's just anti-club now. She's mm-hmm. not into it. That's all. Okay. Yeah.
We go to the briefing room next.
Heated debate. Oh my gosh.
Yes, very heated debate. The doctor wants to use the research. Mm-hmm. Paris agrees. Paris is arguing again, handheld in this scene, not a Steadicam scene, mm-hmm. but a lot of. It's not a oneer, but a lot of movement.
Yes.
A lot of very emotional acting. I was really happy with what I did in this
scene. I think you did a great job in this scene. You were definitely focused and you were on point, and I believed you. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And Chakotay mm-hmm. and Paris kind of go nose to nose at one point. Even Janeway gets very emotional.
She does. She really does.
Yeah. And she. Yeah. She basically says, we're going to continue to use this for now. Mm-hmm. And everyone's dismissed. And I like the moment at the end when Paris walks around and just stops, walks up into that close up with her and says, thanks.
Yeah, that was a nice shot. That was a nice moment.
Nice shot. It was well staged. We finished this part of the show cutting back to the holographic lab. Mm-hmm. And we see them preparing to do this procedure, and you see the scalpel tool. You know what I mean? I had a moment where there's a movie called Dead Ringer. It's a David Cronenberg film.
Oh,
that is just horrific. And all the
with
tools.
The crazy tools. Yes.
This is a moment I was
weren't they wearing, instead of scrubs that are green, they had red scrubs on in this movie.
Oh, yeah. It was really
very freaky, man.
Very
that was
stylized.
So-
And that's Twilight how I felt Zone. In this moment as they, you know, got ready for this procedure, getting their tools ready. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a torture moment. But anyway, we go back to the bridge and a screech comes through. And I see Kate Mulgrew jump when the screech happens. And I thought that was very realistic. Like, she really did a good reaction to that horrible screech.
Yeah.
Harry says the vessel is approaching.
Yeah.
And Janeway tries to talk to them and say that, you know, we've got one of your people here. He's been injured.
Yeah.
And another screech interrupts. She jumps again. It was great
reaction. You know what would be really cool if like Neelix showed up on the bridge and said, hey, I speak cytoplasmic life form. And he starts going, and then speaks. That would have been nice. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
That was like when Neelix did the talking to the people with gestures and all the, I loved that. That was hilarious.
All the aspiring actors out there. That's the only time you can hand gesture.
If you're an alien who communicates with
your hands.
Movement.
Yes.
Yes. That was very good.
All right.
I feel like I would love to bring that into Resident Alien. I should pitch to Alan Tudyk. Like, at some point he should speak, you know, to an alien or something with movement and gesture. Alan would be so funny doing that.
He would be. Oh my goodness.
We go back to the holo lab, and Torres has now been moved into this holographic lab, and they're getting ready to perform this procedure. And Krell is leading the way here, and he's opened the alien's body and is applying these shocks with a cortical probe to stimulate it. And it's very, you see this thing like shaking, and the doctor is really against it. The doctor finally can't take it anymore. He intervenes because he says, lower the frequency. He finally does. He says, I'll take you offline if you don't listen to me. So,
he says, instead of the primary node, let's move this device to the secondary node.
Yep. He has an idea.
This is why we can save the alien life form as well. We don't have to kill it. And so that's what happens.
A much, much less painful approach and they can save both of them. So the doctor is very smart and makes a really smart move here. Mm-hmm. We go back to the bridge. Now our power is down.
Yep.
Because the aliens, in trying to rescue their crew member, have sort of drained our power. So, which is kind of symbolic of the way the lizard jumped on Torres and sort of drained her.
Yeah, it is. And it's weird because the alien ship, it threw a tractor beam on us. So the tractor beam is draining our power. So it was a tractor beam / power draining beam at the same time, which I thought, wow, that's interesting.
That's kind of their move. They sort of drain. They're kind of parasites, giant parasites. We go back to the holo lab. The procedure's happening. The lizard is dying.
Did you just call it a lizard?
Yeah, yeah, the little lizard guy.
And I the would doctor, say a centipede, but okay, yeah, let's go with that.
Insect how about lizard.
Hey, how about a lizard and centipede together? A lizipede.
A lizipede.
Thank you.
A lizipede is dying.
Yes.
Doctor says we got to substitute something for the metabolic energy that it was using from Balana. And finally, they do. They detach this thing with their procedure and the doc smart moves. The doctor is able to restore its metabolism and they beam it right over to the ship.
Right.
And they beam this alien. They've detached it. Mm-hmm. And then on the bridge, we hear a screech again.
Yep.
And Janeway in a close-up looks at him and goes, you're welcome.
Welcome.
And like, that's she doesn't know what they said.
No,
she's assuming they said thanks. Maybe they said screw you. Why'd you torture our buddy?
But then
you're welcome. Maybe that's what she said you're welcome about.
Why did you torture our buddy? You're welcome.
You're welcome.
I just think it's funny that you're right. When she says you're welcome, what if the aliens were like, wait a minute, you know our language this whole time? You understood us?
Exactly.
You know? You understand cytoplasmic communication? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very funny.
You're welcome.
Okay.
So now we go to the captain's ready room.
Yeah.
And it's Janeway and the doctor talking. Mm-hmm. And Janeway informs the doctor that Balana's temper has recovered, which is very funny, that she is furious about using the holo doctor. And Janeway asks, you know, should we delete this program? Mm. And she ultimately says, doctor, this is your decision to make. You're the chief medical officer. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to decide whether we keep this doctor around or not. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Next, we go to Balana's quarters. Janeway enters and there's incense burning.
Yes.
Which I've never, have we ever seen an incense? Maybe in Tuvok.
In Tuvok, at Club Tuvok we have, but we have not seen it in Club
Balana. Never seen Club Balana have incense, but she's got it going on. She also, I made a note, she's got three pads in her hand. She's literally holding three pads.
Multitasking. And
what occurred to me, so, you know, I work in Canada right now. I have a Canadian phone.
Right, and you have and a U.S. phone.
A US phone, yeah. But I actually have two US phones because my old US, I got a new phone and some of my stuff is still on my old. So I have had moments where I've literally had three phones in my hand.
My
people
God.
Tease me at work. They're like,
yeah,
how many phones? Where's Robbie's phones?
You
and I was like, oh, Balana's trying to copy me in my Canadian phone situation with her three pads. Janeway walks in with the incense and Balana says, yes, it's a relaxant and it expels demons. It's an ancient Klingon remedy.
Expels
which I
demons.
Love that she's sort of embracing her Klingon
she
side.
She is here. Embracing her culture and her heritage.
Mm-hmm. And she's really mad. And the captain says, losing you is unacceptable. I'm the captain. I had to make a decision. And I love Balana's line where she says, you know, captain, you can't order someone to get rid of an emotion.
Yes.
I love that line.
Yeah, she's snappy. Snappy Torres.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the captain turns to leave. And I noticed as Kate turned and headed towards the door, she hesitated a second and then the door opened. And it just reminded me of all the times we would walk toward a door, to a door and it would either not open. We'd, you know, in theory, they're supposed
now,
to
you
open.
Just
and
said
we just,
all the times. Let's be
it's
precise.
Not that often,
it is rare when it
was rare. Usually, right. Will Toms did the doors.
Yes.
He was phenomenal.
Yes. But
sometimes, and I feel like I caught it where she turns and then it opens and then she went.
Yeah.
Just a hair.
Yeah.
But also, you remember sometimes we'd have to do a takeover because the doors would shut and they would bounce.
Yes.
They had sort of like
they had a
rubber gasket or something. And so if Will pulled them too hard, they would sort of
they would bounce off of each other and they didn't want that. So.
And we couldn't catch the bounce on camera. So
No. Because then it would go. It would do that, but it didn't do that. So we would have to redo that.
Go back to the HoloLab. And I did notice back here that it was the shot started on a cart or something and then tilted up as the doctor comes in.
Yeah.
And I noticed the carpet for the first time. And then I thought, oh, every spaceship in the Delta Quadrant has carpet.
Yeah.
Because all these sets had carpet for sound to make it a little less echoey and a little better sound quality. Prell wants to listen to opera like they had discussed. Mm-hmm. But he asks, are you still wrestling with your ethical subroutines? Which I thought was a good line. Yeah, the doctor tells Krell that the captain left the decision up to him.
Right.
And he cannot, in good conscience, continue to make use of it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that Bob was reading off of a pad as if he had written this down. I'm sure that, you know, it was like the doctor had to make his notes and he wanted to come in and read what he read. But it reminded me when we had pads and we were supposed to be reading off of them, it was never the thing on the pad that we were supposed to be reading. They never put that on the pad. So you always had to ignore what was really on the pad and remember what you were doing. It was harder. It was like doubly hard.
It's harder, but I do think that depending on where the camera was, we could have written it down on paper and just pasted it with tape on there.
Oh, that's
just looked
true.
At it. That's, you know,
true.
What I'm saying? Yeah. And I do recall maybe that might have happened with a actor or two during the 7 years. It might have happened. So
maybe he did that because it did look like he was reading something and as if the doctor had prepared the speech and he was going to read it out loud.
Correct.
But I didn't know if he was really normally that's never printed on.
Yeah, no, the standard pad that we have is just some other gibberish that's printed on that thing. Exactly. It has nothing to do with the lines. So
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Krell gets angry at this. He reminds the doctor that these techniques that he finds so disgusting are the things that save Torres.
That's right.
And he says, you're going to need me again.
Yeah.
There's going to be some new unknown life form or challenge ahead that I'll be vital to you guys surviving. And the doctor says, his doctor's oath says, first do no harm, which was in my limerick, by the way. and
thanks for the reminder.
Yes.
Okay.
And the doctor ultimately orders the computer to delete Krell.
Yeah.
And his eyes go wide. And just before he can say anything, he's deleted. And and the whole thing is deleted. So we have this nice cool transition on the holodeck where you see the whole set and the whole everything and disappear. And he walks out in kind of a crane shot. As we go up, he heads back to life on the ship.
But it's a bookend scene. It's a bookend scene. The first scene is in the holodeck, right? And the last scene is in the holodeck. Mm-hmm. Exactly. The bare holodeck where you can see all the mechanisms behind the holodeck. All right. So what is your rating of this episode, which was written so well by Jerry Taylor? Great lines in this episode. What are you going to give it?
Really great
10?
Script. I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10. Okay. It was really well acted. It was really well written. The reason I feel like there were a couple of things. Fundamentally, I think this alien looked bad. What did we call it again? Lizipede?
Lizipede.
The Lizipede just didn't look very cool to me. It looked and so I constantly was like, the fundamental jeopardy of this episode hinges on this creature being so exotic and unexplainable. And it just fundamentally looked like rubber. So,
Okay.
That was one of the reasons. And then there was a couple other things like breaking through the force field, which led to this whole problem. I just never explained. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
The giant shaking. I don't know. There was a few things that took it down a notch for me. Mm-hmm. But I think at its core, it's a good episode. I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 7.2. So similar to yours, I gave it a 0.2 because I really like Jerry Taylor's script. I felt that it was a strong script, well-written. So I'm going to give it a little bit more.
Nice.
All right. What do we have as our consensus for our
consensus? So our admirals and captains on Patreon who participated in all kinds of things with us.
Yes.
They're now voting. We have an average score for this episode from our captains and our admirals.
Great.
And the score on average from them, they give this episode a 7.6.
Okay.
So we were pretty close.
So if we were on The Price is Right, I would have won that showcase. I would have walked up.
Yes, you would have. Yeah, you were 2 points higher than me.
Yes.
So point two.
Point two higher than you. Closer to 0.6.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Nice. What do you think the theme is for you in this episode?
My theme for me, I would say it has to do with when Krell was talking about how his hospital, his civilian hospital, didn't have all the resources that the military hospital had, and that he truly had to adapt. And I think also the doctor had to adapt in how to treat B'Elanna, because he had no clue. So that is really my lesson from this episode, is that when you are faced against a problem which seems insurmountable, you have to learn how to adapt some way, somehow. You have to turn into MacGyver and get it done. So
get it done. Mm-hmm. Interesting. My theme was to never forget that we are benefiting from situations where people have suffered in the past, whether it's, vaccines, whether it's medicine, whether it's just the comfort of heating and air conditioning, refrigeration. Right. Like, people didn't have that and suffered, and many people died in those situations. And the solutions we have now are based on, because people had suffered.
Yeah.
Hardship, pain, illness, whatever it was before.
Right.
And just to sort of honor that there was suffering, and then how and having gratitude for what we have now, and maybe learning the lesson of some of that suffering was accidental in the past and we learned from it. Sometimes it was intentional suffering that we had to learn from. And so moving forward to learn and do better, be grateful and do better.
All right.
That's all. That's cool. My theme.
Thank you everyone for joining us for our discussion of Nothing Human. Join us next week when Robbie and I will be talking about the episode 30 Days. 30 Days.
Oh.
Ooh. I like the title. 30 Days.
Yeah.
All right. See you next week.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week.